Good morning, KINS. It's 8:11 with Mr. Foster on board.
Good morning.
How you doing?
It's the first day of summer. It's beautiful out
That's
there.
That's what Ange kept reminding me all morning, complaining about how cold it was this morning, how hot it was last night.
Was it cold this morning? It was warm.
Not for me.
Oh, okay.
No, it was like almost normal.
Well, that's, you know, I'm not going to get involved in your domestic affairs. let you handle those things.
Yeah, okay. Well, yeah. I'll just, yeah.
Good luck with that.
What are the...
What do we do, lose our
you
book?
You leave the joint for a couple of days, things go crazy. Yeah, all right.
Now what are we looking for? Why they say it, right?
Well, yeah. All the old books somehow migrated over there. I don't know.
So what happens if you let the kids in? Kids are in charge, you know, mess it up.
Yeah, all right. Are you ready for a why do we say it?
I am ready.
Why do we say shampoo?
Why do we say shampoo?
Yes.
Wow. That must, I think that is a derivative of a French word that meant something you cleaned your head with. Am I right?
Well, it starts with early travelers to India.
Oh, okay.
So I'm not wagering heavy that you have a clue of what you said.
I was thinking like shampoo.
So, okay. Early travelers in India were intrigued by a native custom. Sultans and nabobs had special servants who massaged their bodies after hot baths. From a native term for to press, such a going over of the body with knuckles was called the shampoo or shampoo. Europeans were skeptical of its merits and sometimes afraid. One explorer said he couldn't have taken the risk had he not seen several Chinese merchants shampooed before his turn came. Outnumbered by a ratio of 40,000 to 1, every outsider, from merchant prince to soldier, learned to enjoy the luxury of a daily shampoo by servants. Taken to England.
Yeah, well, where personal hygiene in Europe was lacking back in the day.
The invigorating ritual quickly shrank to nearly nothing. Only the wealthy could afford to keep a professional bath attendant on the household staff. So by 1860, the once exotic term named the operation of washing and rubbing only the scalp, usually without help.
There you go.
Shampoo.
Okay, well. I'm not giving myself any credit for that, although I think I did say shampoo.
Yeah. Taking a shot at something somehow, some way.
Yeah, well, that was a desperate move.
Yeah. I didn't quite make the grade, though. So, here we are, summertime.
Summertime, and living is easy. Well, you know, I was in Reno last week with Cody Riggetts, and we went to an airline conference, and summer is going to be very busy and very challenging for the air industry.
Well, we've been hearing that in the last couple of weeks.
Yeah. And it's, you know, we that's in the news generally, but it's always interesting to talk directly to those who are, you know, involved in the airlines and seeing what the issue is. And it's really a crew problem, and, you know, not lacking of pilots, lacking of flight attendants, even mechanics. It's a labor issue, which is interesting because, you know, I go there as an economic development person who deals with a lot of different businesses and industries. And so, you know, those airline folks talk about their particular industry, and I said, you know, welcome. Everybody's having that issue. But, for example, like Allegiant Airlines was one of the airlines we talked to, and they had canceled, like, it was about 8 weeks ago. They looked at their summer schedule that was already in place and said, you know what, we got to cancel a whole bunch of these flights out, you know, 8 weeks ago as opposed to last minute. And that was really just, we don't have the capacity to fly this schedule. There's been a lot of recovery, but then... you know, the mandatory age of pilots, of retirement for pilots is 65. So you're having a lot of those that were operating, you know, that came on in the 90s and there was, baby boomers, all that. They're leaving and there are just not as many people coming in. And, of course, the barrier to getting into the seat is a lot higher now with
prices.
Well, you know, it is much more expensive.
Oh, that seat, the pilot seat.
Right, the pilot seat. Well, and, you know, pricing is a problem because what they did is they upped the flight hours you needed to get into that seat. And pilot pay is catching up, but it's...
Is that the FAA that did that?
Yeah, there was, after a crash in New York, there was a legislation that was passed that did a couple of things, one of which was increase or decrease the amount of time you could be flying, or increase the rest time. And so you built some inefficiency, for example, into the system by that. In other words, you couldn't get as many hours out of a pilot in a day as you used to.
Right.
That might not have been a bad thing. you know, they get, their pilot fatigue was an issue, right? And you don't want...
Now, is that true even for the big ones where they got three or four pilots up there?
Yes. I mean, because, well, you know, this is primarily... I mean, you think about going overseas, you'll have two crews potentially. And,
right.
But it certainly affects the domestic, you know. And then the other thing that happened is they upped the number of hours you needed to get into what they call the right seat, the first officer seat, up to 1,500 hours of flight time. And that makes sense at some level, but that's not necessarily quality flight time. In other words, you might have fewer hours and more.
You were on the team,
right?
But you only played an average of 2 minutes a day.
Well, yeah, or something like that. I mean, or you're flying small planes or whatever to get your hours that aren't really relevant to the. So that was an issue as well, and it's killing everybody.
Yeah, and we'll talk about airport issues.
Yes, let's do it.
Yeah, all right. KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster from REDEC. Greg, some of the different challenges that we've been hearing in the airline industry over the last, three, 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Flight cancellation, support teams at the airports aren't there, TSA is short, blah, 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 blah,
right,
blah, blah.
Right.
2,000 flights canceled? 3,000 flights canceled. I mean, that's enough that it's not just SFO playing their game.
No,
this is a
whole lot
different level of,
exactly.
of impact. But the thing I found curious was over this past weekend, Delta.
Mm-hmm.
Delta was, if it's systemic, how can it be one airline and still be systemic at the same time?
Well, it is systemic. I think that part of it is. Who the media notices having issues, right? And how they deal with those cancellations. So, for example, Allegiant, saw at 8 weeks out our schedules. We're not going to be able to fly our schedule as we planned over the summer, and so they began canceling. So you don't hear them, right?
But don't the big boys have more people the same thing and looking ahead?
It's not an unreasonable question, and we ask the same question ourselves because. The airlines are obviously huge corporations, and you'll have the network planners, and the revenue managers and the operations. And if you want to, if you want to start a fight, get the operations and the network planners into a room, right? Because network planning is going, and revenue management says, we see demand going here. We can just squeeze all these in. Let's do it. And the other side, you have operations who are trying to figure out, we got to get all these pilots recertified after the pandemic, all this stuff going on. We have all these retirements, how are we going to do it? And coming out of the pandemic was really interesting. We got all this new service and some of it's gone and some of it's still here. I think there was a race to market, right? And so because the market was well developed prior to the pandemic. Everybody was kind of, you know, working on the margins, trying to open up new bases and all that. Well, it was, you know, wiped clean. And so you saw airlines, which is kind of typical in the industry and certainly much more in the past, where it was, you know, we got to go grab market share and then we can own this market. And
so it was like the Cola Wars.
Yes, exactly.
Not margin, market share.
Well, and funny, Herb Kelleher, who was the founder of Southwest Airlines, he was an attorney in Texas and founded this airline. And he said very early on, if I hear any of my, you know, top guys talking about market share, not profitability, I'm going to fire him. Because that was the old airline model. It was like, we're going to grab market share. We're going to be this. And, you know,
they
go bankrupt
faster.
Every 10 years. Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so the industry, up until, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago, was like that. When you had these new models, the ultra-low-cost carriers and some of these other things, then you had to change your models. And, you know, we saw some of the big airlines that were those market share. I mean, no one ever thought, you know, TWA, Pan Am, you know, these are American brands that will never be gone. Well, you know.
Northwest.
Where are they now? Yeah, Northwest was purchased by Delta, but yeah.
Oh, they were absorbed?
Yeah.
Okay.
But a lot of these airlines, you know, they were all about market share and profitability will follow, right? And
for a number of them,
that didn't happen. And you know, now
that's not profit following.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
There's a sickle in that guy's hand.
Yeah, exactly. So the only thing you can get it from Pan Am now is, you know, vintage Pan Am stuff on the internet, right? Because they went away. And that was, you know, TWA and some of these others, they were iconic brands. You couldn't, you know, prior to deregulation, no one would ever think that those kind of airlines would be gone. Those were American, big American brands.
So with that challenge that's out there, we hear fuel cost being a big bugger.
Yep.
And yet you look at most of the planes and they're not running half empty.
Right.
They're not running a third empty. They're running maybe two or three seats empty.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, so they're more efficient now.
Absolutely.
With their cost management.
Yep. Yep.
Than what they've ever been. Not necessarily customer service.
Well,
but management to the bottom line. Okay, so you can't really say that you're losing money running these routes because unless your labor costs are really out.
Well, and they aren't necessarily, you know. So the cancellations you're seeing in the taking down, I mean, that hurts them. You know, one of the network planners we're talking to said, you know how bad it hurts to take a flight out of the system that you know is and has and will be profitable, but we just
depends on what end of the decision you're on, Kemosabe.
Right, right. Yeah. So they, because the network planners, you know, their goal is to build their networks and be successful, right? And they, you know, the way it works is they will study a market and then they'll, you know, pitch that up into their company and until, you know, they have to convince their uppers that what they're saying is a great investment. And so once you do that, and then it's like, well, we don't have the pilots to fly it or the flight crews to staff it, you got to take that out even though it's profitable. Because right now it is all about profitability and margins are squeezed. You know, we get so many, boy, it was so nice to fly back in the 70s. Well, of course it was. It was A, regulated industry.
Subsidized, yeah.
And B, most folks didn't fly. It was very expensive on a inflation adjusted basis.
A relative
right,
basis,
yeah. So now we're less Macy's and Nordstrom or Neiman Marcus and more, you know, Walmart and Target. And so margins are thinner, but that's why you see those planes so full and those seats so small.
Oh, they made the seats smaller too?
Oh, you're down to a 30-inch pitch or 29-inch pitch.
Oh, good. So it wasn't me.
No.
Expanding. It was the seats.
They're trying to get more bodies onto a plane. Yeah.
Dandy. It's 8:30.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now,
live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I can't
keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster. Greg, one last question about the airlines, and we can move on to some local stuff. Why don't the airlines have their own pilot schools? I mean, if there's a shortage, I would think they could schedule the hours and get these folks up and running and start
United,
to backfill.
Well, and they're starting to head that direction. United has just opened one, and you're starting to see a lot more airline investment into that pilot training. And the issue is, unfortunately, that there's going to be a 2 to 3 year lag, even if they start investing now to dealing with this issue, and it's going to get potentially worse before it gets better. But back in the day, in the 90s, pilots, there were plenty of pilots. We really started hearing about the pilot shortage. I'm trying to think when, I go to these conferences to learn about issues, and, maybe 7-8 years ago, it's like, well, this might be an issue. And it's gotten worse and worse.
They get about 2,000 hours a year. I mean, if they're going full 8 hours, full time, and I don't. But you said they had to cross 1,500.
Well, that's to get into the aircraft, to get your airport transfer, airline transport certificate. But
so it really is like not to sound diminishing, but it sounds like it's a community college, an AA degree.
It's interesting. I think that there is, it used to be, you could come out with military training, you could go to flight schools, and then it became, well, we want you to have a 4-year degree and a pilot. And I think now.
To be a pilot, they need 4 years?
Well, but I think now we're seeing, because I was at this conference, as I mentioned, and they're saying, well, it could be a 2-year or it could be a training school that's not, connected to a university. You really need to know all that to fly.
Learn how to recognize what a plane looks like.
Right. Because really, you have to be intellectually capable. But a lot of what you're going to get is you're trained for a specific aircraft and certified. So you're going to do a lot of flight simulation. You're going to do a lot of rides with an instructor, and that's probably the more important stuff. But again, 20, 30 years ago, no one was talking about pilot shortage.
They got an attitude.
Well, and
a little cocky.
And didn't really understand the demographic trends, right? So you think about all the pilots that may have come out of the military, Vietnam or whatever else, they're aged out. And the mandatory retirement age is 65, so.
I thought they were going to open that up.
Well, there was some, there was some discussion. There's about maybe we can add a few years to that.
And 65 ain't looking too bad right now.
No, well, I'm like, wait a minute, 65.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a young man or woman, Yeah. But that was one of the, we had a presentation from the Regional Airline Association, and that's the regionals. Airlines like the SkyWest and the smaller, they're particularly hard hit because the legacy carriers, the majors, are just,
well, they're the minor leagues,
right? So they're grabbing a lot of pilots out of there and offering really good money now. I mean, there's bonuses, you're earning 6-figure salaries. They're throwing money at the problem as well, and so if you're a smaller airline that's operating on a thin margin, or you're under contract to the majors, you have less ability to do that.
So if a youngster coming out of high school last week,
right,
because I want to be a pilot. Okay, in the old days it was Navy, Air Force, Marines.
Right.
Maybe Army also. Okay. Now helicopter, coastie. Okay, fine.
Dirigibles. Now, whatever.
Do they have to do the military route, or can they go
and
shoot in and be be legit teed up, licensed by 22, 24, and have their career in front of them.
If they have their flight hours in, right? And so part of it,
And simulator doesn't count, does it?
Right. And so that was one of the issues is like, is, you know, crop dusting or flying, you know, sightseeing planes, is that actually
eat at Bob's.
Yeah. So that's, you know, they what they're saying at the conference, those are hours, not training. And it there's like, can you substitute really good training for hours? And that's going to require change in legislation. But you know, folks in the room were saying, you know, I'd much rather have a pilot with 250 or 300 hours on a really good simulator and then doing the aircraft itself, as opposed to someone who came out of flight school, got their license, and then, you know, piloted a Cessna for
right, yeah, 187. Yeah.
Right, and then you're coming back in and trying to get certified into a larger passenger jet. So
it's akin to like the commercial licenses that the drivers have.
Sure.
Specific class rather than
just
driver's license. It's
You can't just walk in with your private pilot's license or even your commercial license. You got to get a what's called an ATP, and that's how you get into those. And it's rigorous. I mean, it really is rigorous because, you know, they want people who are good at what they do and experienced flying those jets. They're full of people.
Is that something that we could position ourselves? I mean, with the number of airports that we have and with some of the different
conditions we have.
Like Ronerville could
or
could house?
ACV or anything. Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, yeah.
And I've had a couple very brief conversations with Dr. Jackson, President Jackson, and who's a pilot as well and loves aviation. And so there's, you know, they would love to look at that sometime in the future of like, can we do something like that?
So that's a school thing, not an airport thing.
It could be a combination. I don't think that it would.
Well, yeah, you need the airport.
Right. Yeah. You need the airport and you need the school. And I think that would be a great partnership.
Yeah, I would think, you know, some of the, whether it's Murray Field or wherever, you could set up some classrooms with the simulators in there.
You can do simulators and you can do flight training and, yeah.
But that would be driven by the school, then, not an airline.
Well, I think the airlines will probably, it depends on how bad the situation gets about where they want to invest. They may become desperate enough, they're looking for anywhere.
Yeah, or just send their people here.
Yeah. Well, they have big flight training. You know, the airlines do have the big flight training centers that they have that do recertification. And it's mostly simulator training, which is, you know, pilots have to go through.
They just need more kids going through.
We need bodies. Yeah, that's it.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:43.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right. You can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable. So book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back talking shop this morning with Greg Foster from REDEC. So, Greg, with all the discussion that is in the general media and I guess probably in a lot of coffee tables and a lot of dinner tables about recession, about depression, about inflation, about gas prices, this is and that, with your barometer.
my crystal ball. It's all murky and crap.
What sense do you have? Is the local business community still as positive as what it has been the last little bit?
You know, right now, where I see the most pessimism, and certainly, you know, we have about, I don't know, 50, 60 businesses in our portfolio, is lack of labor. So there's positivity there. I mean, I've got lodging folks in I've talked to them, so how's your summer? And the summer is booking up really nice. But we're having so many businesses here that are struggling trying to find workers.
Is it a compensation thing or an expectation, or are there just people that have, however they can do it, chosen not to work?
Right. You know, it's probably all of the above, which is a terrible answer, but it's not an untruthful answer. you know, our labor force is about 10% smaller than it was in 2010 here. So we've lost a lot of people in the labor force.
Not our population.
Not necessarily, right.
Just those who are interested in working?
Right, right. Well, and I mean, we have that, to a certain extent, there's a big demographic, I mean, obviously a continuing demographic change as the baby boomers age out of the labor market. And so that's a big issue. There just aren't as many people as there were, you know, those folks born in 46.
We're not seeing age extend out significantly due to medical advances and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So we still have got the same number of people that are here.
Well, but
population wise,
right?
Just zero to dead,
right?
So we've got that backfill, and those folks that are not baby boomers still have to make a living.
Correct. So labor force, what they call labor force participation, which is a number that the
is that, know, a foo-foo number?
Well, no, it's an actual number, and it may not be. You know, one of the things that we track is like unemployment rate and all that, and they say, well, that may not be the best number, but at least it's consistent over time. So it could be upper or lower, but at least you can watch the trends. And that labor force participation is lower, so it means the percentage of people who they deem is able to work, available for work.
And interested in
right, are not participating in the labor force. The number of people who, again, as we get older in an average age, right, you're going to see people dropping out. And you know, some folks may be finding alternatives. And so this is a nationwide problem. I mean, certainly when I go down and talk to my colleagues, throughout California in economic development.
It's across the board.
Oh, yeah, it's increasing realization. Yeah. Boy, we need to figure out a way to get people into work. And so when I see, you know, signs around town here that say, you know, we're closing for lack of short staffing, then you see that in retail. Who'd ever thought, right? Especially here where we always had sort of traditionally high unemployment.
Is this a reflection, do you think, also of some of the e-commerce? You talk reducing hours, reducing labor costs, mm-hmm. or however you want to define that. Seems like it would be a natural or an evolution off of more and more e-commerce. So, okay, fine. You can still get your stuff.
Right.
But it doesn't feel that way. It feels like something totally different.
Right, right. And, you know, there's a downward pressure on pricing. Of course, you had the Walmart effect. Now you have the Amazon effect, you know.
And the gas pump effect.
Well, and right now then we have, you know, big constraints on discretionary spending, you know, based on, you know, things you need, food, you know, clothing, all that, and fuel are going up. And so you have fewer discretionary dollars. Now, we are an affordable alternative for tourists, right?
We got enough population centers
right,
in the neighborhood.
Right, we're, right. So, you know, we might be capturing more of the regional tourism industry. But then again, in the airline industry, as we mentioned earlier, the demand is surging. So there may be a lot of pent-up demand from 2 years of pandemic.
Yeah, they're not going five-star for their dining. They're going two-star.
Well, yeah.
But you're still going out.
Yeah. I like diners, you know.
Yeah. I had heard 60-something percent of the population feels that they need to have a vacation this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
How they get there, that's...
Well, I'm driving to Montana in a week, and it's going to cost me a fortune to get there, but I'll be at $12 a night at a national forest.
Yeah, enjoy the $4 gas pumps.
Yeah, there you go.
See everybody tomorrow.